Hey, everybody. On today's episode of The Top Shelf, we have with us Taylor Otwell. We talked about everything from the beginning of Laravel all the way to their massive $57 million raise with Excel and what that's enabling for Laravel. Really hope you enjoy this episode. Also, we want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor for today's episode, Infinite Red. You can find out more about them later in this video. Hi, everybody. I'm TJ DeVries, and I'm happy to welcome you to another premiere episode of The Top Shelf. With me, I have my co-host, The Primogen, the 19th most followed account on GitHub. For our guest, we have a somewhat less esteemed open source contributor, likely best known for his .NET and COBOL work, and coming in at a lowly 26th most followed account on GitHub. I'd like to give a lukewarm welcome to Taylor Otwell. Taylor,
what's up?
Thanks for being here with us today.
Also,
thank you for that intro.
Yeah. You've stated multiple times that many Laravel official applications were written using Laravel and then Inertia and Vue.js on the front end. Our first question is, why do you hate React and React developers?
So the actual story goes, I was too dumb to learn React. Back in maybe 2015, 2016, Vue.js I found much easier. Actually tweeted this, too dumb for React, enjoying Vue.
That's a great tweet.
And that is literally how Vue became very entrenched into the Laravel ecosystem. However, Laravel Cloud is actually written with Inertia and React. So our latest upcoming product will be React on the front end.
So you are, in fact, not too dumb for React anymore?
I'm not writing any of that front end. Still too dumb for React. Thankfully, we've hired people that are not too dumb. So,
Mark. So what, by the way, what was the choice? If you recommend Vue so much, why did you use React for Laravel Cloud?
Mainly because of the wide ecosystem of just like libraries, from component, you know, UI components like buttons and charts and things like that, to animation libraries, seemed a little bit richer on the React side. So I think that's why the team leaned that direction.
Nice.
Yeah, I think a lot of people probably don't actually know what Inertia is. So I have like an actual question that would be fun to talk about, which is like, can you tell us a little bit about Inertia? Because I think it's a pretty interesting technology.
Yeah. Inertia is a project that was created by this guy named Jonathan Rennick back in like 2018 or 2019. And what it does is it lets you write a Laravel or a Rails app for that matter, or like an Elixir app, because there's multiple like backend adapters for Inertia. Where you like write controllers and respond with like pages with arrays of data in the typical way you would write like a Rails or a Laravel app that was just like PHP or Ruby on the front end. But that page actually corresponds to like a React component that might be like user/dashboard in your, you know, in your app. And that data gets hydrated into the props of that React page. So what it allows you to do is write a Laravel app with React on the front end, but all of the routing and all the data retrieval happens in the Laravel side. No, it's not client-side routing. You're not making like fetch calls to get the data after the page loads. Everything just like bam on the screen. So you don't really ever have like loading indicators. You don't have weird like flicker when the page loads. It feels like writing a traditional server-side web app, but you get to like use React as your template language and get to enjoy all of the React libraries that you would typically use. So I think it's a way to pair Laravel and React or Vue in a way that just doesn't make you want to go crazy. You know, it's just like a very, feels very sane way to write apps.
Okay, so yeah, I'm somewhat unfamiliar, I guess. Could you extend that? What libraries is it most like? Is it most like Hotwire that DHH has? Or what makes it different from these? Because that it doesn't quite connect all the dots for me.
Like Hotwire, you still have to write like Ruby on the front end, right? Like it's still like ERB templates, I guess. Mm-hmm. I think it's quite a bit different than that in the sense that you're truly like writing full on React on the front end or full on Vue. However, like when you make a post on your page, like on the React side, we actually have an Inertia library where you hit like form.post in your JavaScript. And on the back end, you know, you save some data and then you return like a redirect, like you would, you know, like old school web dev post redirect. But Inertia handles all of this stuff gracefully to where it feels like you're kind of using an SPA. Okay. but you're actually doing traditional like server calls, redirects, and all of that, which I find like a very like simple, productive way to work, but you still get to enjoy like React and Vue on the front end. Like I said, where if you want to pull in like some chart library, you want to use frame or motion, you have access to all of that stuff.
Nice. So does that mean that effect, what you're saying is that Inertia really does not care what you write on the front end? It really is just all for back end programming.
Totally. Yeah, totally. I actually think of Inertia as like sitting in the middle as just almost like a wire protocol between your back end and the front end. And you can use Rails on the back end and Vue on the front end, or Laravel on the back end and Svelte on the front end. And it's like it has adapters to translate this sort of wire protocol between different back ends and front ends. But it's just a way to pair modern JavaScript front ends with more traditional full stack back ends in a way that doesn't make you want to pull your hair out, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense, because at least my experience with a lot of the difficulties once you enter into templating land is you end up feeling like you're writing some weird amalgamation of all of them if you have to start adding interactivity and components and other stuff, right? If you're making a website for like a restaurant and you need to just display the menu, you don't need any of these. Like, you can probably just do templates and you can make it look pretty by just doing regular styling things, but I want to make this really responsive app, do all this extra stuff. I can see how, like, okay, we're just going to have everything be displayed with JavaScript in the browser, and we're going to do all of our other stuff on the back end the way that we know how to do and can move fast and get everything done there. So, like, Inertia sits, like you're saying, in between those two, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, and totally.
Are other, like, I know there's different sort of adapters on the front end side. Are there other adapters like right now that people have that are for the back end side? Like, are people doing it with Ruby?
Yes. There's a Rails adapter. There's a Phoenix adapter for like the Elixir web framework. I don't know what other adapters are out there. I would say it's definitely most popular in Laravel, I think, just because Jonathan, the author of it, came out of Laravel, you know, and that's sort of where it got the most traction. But a guy named Derek Reimer has been maintaining the Phoenix adapter. And then we have someone that maintains a Rails adapter on the back end. But I don't think they've really like gained significant traction in those worlds like they have in Laravel.
Yeah. Speaking of sort of some of the other ecosystems, I'll pull a direct quote from you, which is that I wish DHH would just delete Hotwire. So when you were at Rails World, did you convince DHH to delete Hotwire and or try Inertia?
So we talked about this a lot. Jonathan was there, the creator of Inertia, and Adam Wathen was there, who paired with him a lot creating Inertia, but also went on to create Tailwind, of course. Both of them come out of the Laravel world. We talked so much about if we could just get DHH like at this little table and show him Inertia, just 5 minutes, let us show you what it can do, that, you know, the scales would fall off his eyes and he would be, you know, convinced that this is the way. It didn't happen. You know, obviously he was very busy at Rails World, surrounded by people pretty much constantly, but I still have hope that if we could just make that happen, that we could really make some headway there, you know, and changing the trajectory of the Rails front end story.
So I guess I just have to follow up, which is, why do you want to change his mind? Like, is it because you respect him greatly? And what about, like, what about winning him over to Inertia is motivating you?
I think some of the initial motivation was, I want to be careful here because DHH is my hero, but I think when we use products like Hey and Basecamp, we can really tell that they're written in Hotwire, either because of like delays with certain interactions, or you can tell that like literally every single thing is server rendered. You know what I mean? Even like the little modal pop-ups. And we just feel like if we could show him Inertia, he could see that there's a way to write full stack apps on the back end, but have a little bit more like refinement and nuance on the front end if you're using something like React or Vue, where some of those interactions feel a lot better. So, I mean, that's the gist of it. I think the way DHH maintains Rails is very different from how I maintain Laravel in some areas, and front end is one of them. And I think part of it comes down to the fact that if everyone stopped using Rails except for DHH tomorrow, like,
Nothing changes.
Great. You know what? Yeah. Nothing changes. It's almost like a relief.
Simpler.
Yeah. It's almost a total relief. Whereas if everyone stops using Laravel tomorrow, it's actually kind of bad for me in a way that it's not bad for DHH, which creates like different incentives. And I try to play a more balanced, or I take a more balanced position in terms of, like, you know, we have Livewire, which is, I guess, a little bit more similar to like HTMX or Hotwire on the front end, where everything's in PHP, you know. But I also have Inertia, where you can do React and Vue, and I have to sort of strike a balance between catering to those two types of audiences because I want people to keep using Laravel. So I don't take necessarily the same strong line in the sand stances that he takes on front end for that reason to some extent.
Do you think that his stances, that he's taking these hardline stances, do you think it's good? Do you kind of wish that you could take more of those stances?
I don't think it's good for like having the widest audience possible, but I think that's not actually what he cares or wants about or wants, you know, for Rails. I think he wants a very, very opinionated, you know, omakase, in his words, experience with Rails. I actually enjoy both, you know, using Vue on the front end or React, I guess, you know, with some of the latest stuff we're building, you know, who knows. Yes. But I also actually really like Livewire a lot too and stuff like that. So I actually don't feel compelled to like take this super strong stance either way. You know, I think there are benefits to something like Livewire or Hotwire, especially for incoming devs, because they can stay in one stack. If I take someone totally new and try to like web dev in general and try to introduce them to Laravel with something like Inertia, now I have to teach them Laravel and I have to teach them React. And that's just a lot. You know, if I can teach them Livewire and kind of just focus on PHP, we can still build something really cool, but I don't have to teach them multiple frameworks, you know?
Yeah, I think DHH's thing, and to some extent as well, I've heard you talk about this, is sort of like this idea of, can we make a framework that enables one person to ship a company, right? And like, I think Laravel definitely does that, and DHH has some different opinions about maybe like what's the most effective way to make that happen. But the point of where you're saying, look, I can learn one like thing and then I can do all the stuff that I need to launch my business, and then when I'm sitting on my yacht, I can go hire, you know, people to solve the other problems that I didn't handle, right? We always used to call those yacht problems at my startups, right? It's like, well, either it becomes a problem after we IPO or the company doesn't exist. Today, that company doesn't exist. So it was a yacht problem and we didn't need to solve it, you know? Like, okay.
The yacht problem's real. I love this.
And so, that's how I started Laravel. Like, I was the only person at Laravel for several years. You know, it's very much built to be a one-person framework, but it is a little bit more open-minded on the front end than Rails, I would say.
Yeah, one of the things that I think is pretty interesting about sort of the journey of Laravel from a you're grinding on it in 2010 at nighttime after everyone else is in bed to now, right, is sort of some of the mindset that you have. There's sort of two things that I wanted to touch on when we get to this area. The first one that I think is very fun is this idea of always build the hardest part first. You want to expand on like how you did that as Laravel came into sort of the world, and maybe some other interesting times where that happened throughout Laravel's history?
Yeah, totally. I mean, to give context, anytime I start any new project still to this day, if there's a part that I'm like scared about, or I feel like this is the part that I'm most unsure that I'll even be able to do at all, you know, I would rather just do that first and just fail within a day or two rather than like build the login page and the registration page and the settings page and churn through like 2 or 3 weeks just on boilerplate and then do the hard part and fail. And now I've burned like a whole month, you know, on this project that didn't even work out. So in Laravel's context, like that might be like, I'm going to write the ORM first, cause I feel like that's actually the most complicated piece of the whole framework maybe. And if I'm going to fail, I'd rather just get it out of the way. And as I've built stuff over the years, whether it be like Forge or Laravel Vapor, like our serverless thing, I always built the hardest part first. So on Vapor, it might be like some complex part of like the serverless deployment, Lambda building story. And like, I'll just strap like literally an unstyled front end in front of that, you know, just however the browser renders, the plain HTML, that's how it's going to look, and make the hardest part work. And then once I feel confident that the project is like actually achievable, then do all of the other boring stuff. Plus you're like motivated, I think, the most at the beginning anyway. So if you sort of like spend the first couple of weeks doing a bunch of boring stuff and you kind of lose interest in the project, then when you get to the hard stuff, you're just like super screwed, right? Because you're already like burned through a lot of your like early energy that you could have spent on the harder problems. And if you get over that hard problem at the start and you actually like conquer it, then you're just like that much more energized, you know, to finish the whole thing.
Yeah, Prime, I feel like you could probably take a few lessons from that. Maybe you'd finish one or two of the projects on stream.
Well, the problem is I do start with the hard parts. I'm just not smart enough to finish the hard parts, okay? In fact, I had a really great transition here, TJ. You're kind of ruining the transition here.
Were you going to say, this is why all my projects fail in the first month?
Yes, this is why I tried to eat the frog first, and then I end up just not being able to. I think a lot of people don't – there's this perception of people in public that build and have built big things that when you sit down and you write code, it's easy. It's not like what an average person experiences. It's not me. It's you. You are the best. You knew what you were doing from day one all the way through until now. But hearing that you write the hard part first, that there's parts you're not sure of, probably changes some perspectives a little bit. Do you have anything that's like more specific? Is there a thing that you actually did fail on, or one that you really genuinely were like sweating on before you actually wrote it? And then afterwards you're like, this isn't that bad, or was it continuing to be that bad for a long time?
I think usually it's not as bad as you think in general. There have been projects where I did fail. There's been many projects like that just kind of got thrown away, you know. Matter of fact, I built an entire successor to like Laravel Forge that was a little bit more advanced, did like more advanced load balancing and stuff like that, where I legit threw it away. And I spent a long time on that project, actually, because I kind of got through some of the hard parts. And at the end of like finishing the app, I was like, this isn't that much better than what we had before. It was just like, nope, not going to launch it, you know? So it happens. I mean, but again, like better to just fail as soon as possible, I think, and throw it out. Stuff like in Laravel itself, like the ORM, it usually wasn't as bad as I thought. You know, I would like build it, trash it, rewrite it, try again. And I probably rebuilt some parts of Laravel like three or four times, especially like the routing layer and the database layer. But you know, at the end of the day, it didn't end up being as bad as I thought. And you can always write like the MVP version of something, right? So like the ORM in Laravel today looks very different than how it looked in 2011. Like it's much more complicated, much more advanced. So you can kind of work your way into that.
Well, you know, I've already seen in, at least in YouTube chat, Twitch chat is, by the way, they're just gems. Very kind. They're cheering you on. YouTube chat tends to be a little bit more difficult. And I've seen people say, eloquent is the best, and I saw other people say eloquent is terrible. I didn't even say eloquent correctly, right? Like everyone has an opinion, right? Everybody wants to yell something at you, whether it's something positive or something negative. And so how do you kind of make those choices, especially in open source? Do you lean into the things that people love, or do you listen to the haters and try to make it so that everybody is happy with what you make?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think I've learned a lot of lessons there over the years. There was a period in like, I would say like 2015, 2016, where in PHP itself, there was like a lot of, I guess you would say haters that wanted Laravel to look different, to look more like the way they thought PHP code should look, which was trash and like very enterprise Java style PHP. And I tried to kind of like cater to those people for a while, and it just didn't ever go well. There's always like another hoop you have to jump through. So like, say you have like this small group of people that says like, I like a lot of Laravel, but I hate this, and this is why I don't use it. And so you might be tempted to like change that about the framework. But if you do, they're never like, oh, okay, great, I'm on board now. Like I'm going to start building apps in Laravel. There's always another like thing after that they haven't revealed that, oh, that's great, but this kind of bothers me too, you know what I mean? And it's just a never-ending cycle of just jumping through the next hoop, and they never actually come on board and like one, use it, or two, like become like advocates for it or contribute to it or anything like that. They're just sort of on the sidelines. So like my current perspective, which I've had since then pretty much, is just play like for your fans. You know what I mean? Like if you go to a Slayer concert, they're not playing Taylor Swift. That doesn't mean Taylor Swift is bad or like you shouldn't be a Taylor Swift fan, but just like they're going to play the Slayer hits. You know what I mean? And that's what their fans are there to hear. So I think it's the same way in open source. Like at this point in Laravel's history, we just like play for our fans and we don't really try to build things that like to try to like win over naysayers. You know what I mean? I think that's just sort of like a losing battle to some extent. Of course, I think it's good to like hear outside feedback. And, you know, that's something we recently like changed. Actually, just yesterday, we launched a totally new way to like install PHP on Mac, on Windows, on Linux. And that came from Theo giving feedback on Twitter about how hard it was for him to get started on PHP. So I'm not saying like never listen to people that aren't necessarily in your ecosystem, but just mainly play for your fans, play the hits.
How do you know when to listen to, like, say, you know, Theo mentioned right here. So how do you know when to listen to somebody outside your ecosystem and how to like discernibly take in feedback? Because that's a very difficult question, because he may want it to be like JavaScript, or he may want it like, if DHH wants it to be like Ruby, it may not be very good for you to listen to that advice. So how do you know when to listen to it?
I mean, I try to weight it a little bit based on their experience, their expertise, their general attitude. Are they actually trying to help, or are they just being kind of like snarky? You know what I mean? If people are just have sort of a history of being just like, just picking on everything and being super snarky, then I'm going to weight it a little bit less than someone that's like, if DHH gives me advice, like he's been around the block, he's a good programmer, you know, he knows what he's talking about. I'm going to weight it a little bit heavily than just some like rando, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, plus I just have like, you kind of develop when you do open source, a core group of like friends or contributors that you're going to reach out to, you know, and you're going to ask like, hey, what do you think about this? Or what do you think about that? And we have that with Laravel, you know, like sort of our core fans that are going to give us feedback.
Yeah. One of the pieces of advice that I got from Justin, who's sort of like the BDFL for NeoVim, Justin Keys, is like, don't be afraid to fire users. And I think that's like really important for maintaining a vision, like for open source. For me, I have like a ton of respect for you and for DHH and for some of these other people who have had like a vision for like longer than I've been programming, and they're still iterating, not, which is kind of true, because I wasn't programming in 2010. Sorry. You know, sorry, Prime, to you.
If you haven't done IE7, you're not a programmer. I'm sorry.
Yes, I'm aware. I know you love Windows and Taylor loves Windows 8.1. I'm aware of both of these facts. So, but I just like that as a phrase, to not be afraid of firing some users, because you, like, you have a vision and you're executing on it. And I think that that's just really impressive and cool to see. Along those lines of sort of having a vision, right, and targeting what I would say like excellence is, everybody has a different definition maybe of what is excellent, but at least like targeting that as our North Star. Maybe you can tell the story about the lawns and the lawnmower. I really like this one. it's a fun one for chat.
Yeah. So this was back when I was in college. And this story came up because people would ask me a lot about just like, how do you maintain Laravel's internal code quality? I would say we always took super seriously the stuff that people never see, right? Like the inner depths of some queue abstraction or the database layer that no regular user is really ever going to dive into. I always really sweated like, that has to look good. It has to, like, the code has to be good. It can't be like sloppy, hacked together, because if it all really came down to the fact that if I was going to use this framework to build my own stuff, I had to know it was like really freaking good, or I wasn't going to be able to sleep at night knowing it was like hacked together and my whole business was like built on this ball of mud. But one of the inspirations for that was when I was in college, I was mowing lawns. And I was actually taking care of the entire grounds of like this church in town. So like their soccer fields, all their property, basically. I mowed it. I like did the weed eating, all of that. And my grandpa who's like World War II veteran, kind of like hardcore dude. He passed away a few years ago, but at the time he was there and like helping me. And after every time that we mowed, I would have to like hoist the lawnmower up on this lift and clean out the underside of the lawnmower before it like went back in the garage, because he didn't want like any grass, no grass clippings could get in the garage. So we like had this whole lift system and power washer, and like it had to be spotless underneath, and like he would check it afterwards, you know what I mean? And at the time it felt just like sort of silly to be like wasting this much time getting the lawnmower clean, but I think it just like stuck with me as just like really kind of like extreme example, you might say, of like sweating the small stuff that even people are not really going to recognize, you know what I mean? It's sort of the same concept as like making sure the backside of the furniture is like really well done, that no one's going to see, you know, the backside of some cabinet or dresser. So that's kind of the gist of the story, but it always stuck with me as why I always sweated the small stuff in Laravel.
I love that. The back of the furniture. I love that, because you can tell so much about how a person feels and their view of life by looking at what they've built and what they put on the backsides of all the drawers and on the back of the furniture. Is it cheap or is it great? And there's just something about that that is such a huge throw into like just building stuff that you want to. Sorry, TJ, I just have to express how much I love this take to such a high degree, just because there is something about someone who cares about the detail that nobody sees. And there's just that will always just that mentality in life will just take you so in such a different direction. And yeah, you may not be able to deliver as much or as, you know, as many units, but the units you do deliver are very, very well. Sorry, totally. I just had to. All right.
I was wondering though, like if do you have any particular examples of maybe how some of that has paid off over the lifetime of Laravel, right? Like Laravel's actually like kind of old for like frameworks, especially compared to like a JavaScript framework. It's like ancient, right? It's from the before times. But like how has that attitude and or has it not paid off, I guess, right? Like over the course of Laravel.
I think it has paid off quite a bit, actually, in terms of just, I mean, in real practical terms, the maintenance of the framework. The overall architecture of the internals of Laravel has been the same since Laravel 4, which would be like, gosh, I don't even know, maybe 2014, 2015. As far as the real core of like how it all glues together, you know what I mean, in a basic way, and I think a lot of that is just because we've really sweat every detail. I still get up every morning, so like how I start my day is I go to GitHub and I review every open pull request across the whole org. On the open source side, I don't necessarily review every open source or every pull request on every commercial product. But on the open source side, nothing goes into any open source Laravel repo that I have not seen or reviewed personally. And I'm still the only person that clicks the merge or close button on every PR to Laravel still. And I think that has helped maintain a very cohesive like feel to the framework. Even if the code they're contributing, it works, but is not exactly how I would have done it, I usually will like adjust it to where it feels like all of Laravel is written by like one author, even though there's thousands of contributors by this point. And so, I mean, it's a little bit, I guess, of a bottleneck in the sense that like I still can't take like a true vacation from Laravel. You know, like if we go on a trip, I'm going to spend like the first 30 minutes of the day reviewing pull requests. Otherwise, it just will become overwhelming and backed up. But I mean, I think like that's helped maintain that really polished feeling all the way through. And it's paid off on the maintenance in the sense that we haven't had to do like huge refactors and rewrites of the framework because we sort of sweat the small stuff year after year. And it sort of paid off in the long term.
Yeah, I'm super impressed by that like aspect of Laravel. And I think people really underestimate how valuable it is for a project and or like an ecosystem. Laravel's probably extended beyond like project, right? And it's like a whole ecosystem now, to have a relentless dedication to just simple things like using the same names Oh, we always do. In my limited experience with Laravel, after you find out five names, you can start guessing the names of 20 other things, which is pretty fun. You're just like, I probably type this, and you're like, oh, I can invert it by doing this, or I can combine them with this. And it's a really powerful mechanism, both for your own work, but also with communicating with other people, I think.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's one of the main values I bring on the open source side after this many years is a lot of people, when they submit a PR to like one package or one piece of Laravel, they don't necessarily consider like the wider implications or the wider ecosystem where maybe in this package over here, a similar feature works in this slightly different way. And so if we merge this PR, it's going to feel inconsistent. Whereas since I still review every PR, I'm able to kind of take that wider vision and like 30,000 foot overview of everything and be like, hey, this will make things slightly inconsistent. We should adjust it to be this way. And I think that's super valuable and maybe the most valuable thing I bring to the project on an open source level at this point.
The thing that I'm wondering, and the answer can be just vibes, that's fine too. But how do you balance that drive for perfection with just like stopping and spending too much time on one thing?
It's a good question. I don't know if I have like a super clear cut answer other than just, kind of more intuitive and knowing like, okay, that's enough, on this particular feature. I mean, at this point, it's hard to say because a lot of the main features of Laravel have been written and most of the stuff I review is actually fairly minor. I think you're right that a lot of it is just developed intuition after years of programming and realizing where your time is most valuably spent. And I think that's something that comes with like just experience, of working on projects and applications and seeing things done. And you just kind of get there over the years of like, okay, you know when enough's enough and it'd be better to just move on to something else to balance like the overall good of the project.
Mm-hmm. So with that, you've probably spent, at least from the outside, a ton of time on the ORM, right? Like, how do you've rewritten it, what, three separate times?
Yeah, probably something like that. Yeah.
When is enough enough on that side? Like, how do you know that you've now reached the final state, if you will, of the ORM, or is there still further changes that are needed?
I think we have pretty much reached the final state as far as the features go. Part of it is just the internal confidence that you have in like the overall architecture of the package, in this case, the ORM. And then a lot of it is just as the years go by and companies are using, Laravel, and you just sort of like fewer and fewer major issues crop up, with a certain piece, whether it be the ORM or the queue layer or whatever. And you start really like getting into the extremes. So like in our queue system, like Square has a subsidiary that uses Laravel heavily on queues at a really high traffic. So they actually contributed some stuff back to the queue system that was like very unique, and that we would not have discovered on our own because we're just not operating at that scale. So we kind of try to get it to a good place for like 80, 90% of developers, but there's always going to be those extreme edge cases where we can't see those until someone actually pushes it to that level. And then they usually contribute back, which is awesome. But I think overall we've kind of got things in a good spot for, the average developer, which is really like who we build for at the end of the day.
So there's kind of two kind of questions I want to get to. Let's make sure we talk about the average developer in a little bit. But with ORMs, I know there's a lot of people that argue whether or not you should use an ORM, a SQL builder, or just go plain old raw SQL. How do you balance providing these ORMs and spending so much time on it or leaning into just providing something that is just raw SQL? And if you can choose, which one do you use in this kind of situation?
I usually always use our ORM. However, I have dropped down. Like, we have ways to do all three in Laravel. Like, we have a SQL builder that basically just spits out, you know, SQL strings. We have the ORM, of course, which maps to like models or objects. And then we have just like, you can just run DB select and just give it a string, you know, that you want to run. And I have dropped down to that, you know, in like very just gnarly queries that are just going to be an absolute pain to figure out in the ORM. I would rather just write them by hand. It's just going to be like actually shorter and more terse to just write the SQL by hand. And I spent a lot of time writing very gnarly SQL queries when I was doing enterprise.net and COBOL and stuff. So usually that's not a big issue. I mean, I think for like simple CRUD stuff, you know, if you're just going to pull a user out of the database or update a user, like I just use the ORM usually. It's just like faster and simpler with what Laravel gives you. But yeah, not scared to drop down to raw SQL.
Does that kind of influence the design? Is it easier to design an ORM in which implies that at gnarly queries, it's easier just to do the dropdown? Like, do you actually intentionally bring that into the design?
Yeah, we have actually. So we have like really easy ways to drop down to writing a raw SQL query, but then having it map back to the objects, if that makes sense. So you can actually get back like a collection of user models, even though you wrote the query against the table just with a raw string. You know what I mean? Which I think is cool. And we've definitely used that internally quite a bit.
What do you feel like a distinct advantage of Eloquent is compared to, you don't have to name, you know, like name and shame some other ORM, but you know, sort of like, what are the features that you love the most of where you ended with Eloquent?
Yeah. So I think actually what makes Eloquent and Laravel really powerful compared to, say, like some of the JavaScript frameworks is not necessarily any one feature of the ORM, but it's how it permeates through the rest of the system. So like, let's say, for example, you write a queue job in Laravel, and in maybe the constructor of the queue job, you accept some Eloquent model. Since Laravel is like this batteries included cohesive framework, those two components work together to like serialize the Eloquent model onto the queue system in this efficient way where we just maybe have the, we're not actually serializing out every property of the model. You know, maybe you just have the ID and the class or something. And then the queue system is smart enough to work with Eloquent and hydrate that, pull it from the database, reserialize that model or unserialize the model. And I think that's actually where all of the power of Laravel comes in, is how these things all work together to create a cohesive thing. And that permeates all the way down to the email system, to the queue system, to the event system, to the real-time stuff. It all works together in a way that if you're doing something in JavaScript using like Next.js, which I actually like Next.js as for like building websites, if you pull in like a queue system or you pull in an auth system or a mail system, they don't all necessarily know about each other. And you don't get that same cohesive experience out of the box that you might get with Laravel or with Rails. And I think that's actually the real power. It's not any like one particular feature of one of those things. It's how they all fit together.
There seems to be a huge advantage there, because that is one of the hardest parts of the JavaScript ecosystem, is working with these, you know, all the things you need, but they all need something different. And so you end up writing a lot of plumbing code as opposed to the code you really, really want to write. And so I can see that being exceptionally nice. And that is more of an argument, I guess, you know, this goes back to the whole lawnmower thing, where even your ORM has been thought through not just as an ORM, but also, you know, from soup to nuts all the way through. So that is a very interesting it just blows my mind how well thought through these things are.
Brian,
it's very different in JavaScript, because like one feature of like Rails or Laravel will be like a startup. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like the queue system of Rails or Laravel might be like ingest, which is awesome. But it's just different. You know what I mean? It's just, I'm not saying it's bad or good, but it's just different in that kind of that's how it manifests itself. And the effects you see are sort of a little bit less cohesion in the way everything fits together.
Yeah. As a fun example, Prime, that I think you'll like, is a lot of stuff, at least that I've seen. Taylor, you probably be able to actually use the right words for this. But in terms of like file system access, every way that you're supposed to access the file system is through, I think they're called drivers, right? Or what's... Yeah. So there's like an interface for interacting with the file system. And then when you're ready to move from local to AWS, you just switch something in your config and they're totally they're all the same, right? They all
and then it just goes to S3.
Yes.
Boom.
Yeah.
S3.
Yeah, and a lot of stuff in Laravel works that way. You know, like on this driver-based system, we have a unified API for, in this case, like file storage, and it works with like local storage, S3, even like FTP. You just keep using the same methods, and it just like works. And then it's the same way on queues. Like if you're using Redis or Postgres or SQS on Amazon, you use the same syntax in Laravel, and you just flip the driver based on what environment you're in, and everything works the same.
So how do you make the decision to write all of this? Because this is obviously a large undertaking. I mean, this is most – you effectively have taken all the reasons why these individual things, though great by themselves, can be such a pain to actually build an app with. Why – like how do you determine how much time to spend on these drivers? Because the plumbing part is typically where a lot of easy and very difficult bugs at the exact same time manifest themselves.
Yeah. Almost everything I've built for Laravel is something I actually needed in a real app. And that could be like before I went full time on Laravel, I worked for a company called Userscape based out of New York. They were doing PHP. We were migrating stuff to Laravel. That's when I rewrote a lot of the ORM. That's when I rewrote there. That's when I wrote the queuing system, the database migration system, because it was stuff we actually needed at work to like get work done and build this help desk software that we were building in a like productive way. And I honestly think that's the best way to build these kinds of tools. And I know Rails is very much the same way as they extract stuff out of Basecamp and Hay. And it would be very hard for me to build these kind of things like in a vacuum where I'm just like dreaming up how I think they should work. And I hope it matches reality. Like I don't really know how to build things that way actually. So everything I've always built was built out of real life. And a lot of the like peripheral stuff, maybe like the FTP driver for the file system, that's usually like contributed, you know what I mean, by someone that actually needs it. So they send it in on GitHub. And I just write the stuff that I know that we need either at Laravel now or at previous jobs that we needed to get stuff done.
I think it's kind of my personal experience is I've never met anybody who actually knows how to build it in a vacuum. All of the successful things that I've seen have been people iterating in real world problems and then solving them for themselves. You definitely do find people who have, at least in my experience, like much better intuition compared to other people, or maybe stumble onto the a much better answer at the start, right? You could have chosen different abstractions for Laravel and it could have just died because they were untenable. But all of the really interesting projects in this style, in my experience, have always been because someone takes some good idea and then iterates on it a ton.
I think the intuition is key, and that's like actually the rare thing, I think, is the a lot of people are really great at coding. The intuition is like much more rare in terms of like what will be successful, or even in business, like what will make money? What do users want? It's just much more rare to have good intuition there, I think.
How do you learn to flex that muscle? Because I assume that intuition isn't just simply a born-in attribute and that is it for the rest of your life. There has to be a way to kind of grow in your abilities there. You must, and I assume you didn't start off knowing all the things of Laravel to begin with. So how did you learn to kind of expand that and really start making the right calls?
I think the times I have like leveled up the most are the times when I was either friends with or worked with someone that was much better than me, much smarter than me. I think back to like when I did .NET, I was paired up with people. I was pretty much fresh out of college at this point, you know, like I was not a super, super talented dev or whatever, just like a real hot shot or anything. But I was paired up with people that were just like super good and had really good taste and like really good intuition. And also just really good at knowing what was important to work on, what was not important to work on. And that's where I really like developed a lot of my skills, I would say. And that's something I still tell people to this day when they're like, okay, like how do I get better? And I know it can be hard if you like work from home or you work remotely or whatever to sort of make this connection, but it's really best, I think, if you can find someone that's just like a little bit better than you, a little bit further along than you, and just like shadow them or work with them or pair with them for a little bit and just really pick their brain. And I think that's how you get better the fastest. And I think that applies to like a lot of stuff, right? Like if you're trying to get good at basketball, just play with people better than you, which, you know, I learned the hard way. You know?
There we go. Nice.
So I think, but anyway, for me, that's where I really leveled up.
Yeah, I have a similar experience as well. When I was in college, I made my first like pull request to NeoVim, and I was so bad at programming, but I was very nice and I tried to write tests and I was repeatedly thankful to the people helping me and letting them know and upfront about the areas that I did not know things. For example, Git, they said something along the lines of, well, can you squash these commits? And I said, I don't know what that means. I still don't even know what Git is, really. I don't know how I got to this website, you know? And I think open source can be an avenue for those kinds of experiences, but you have to recognize, unlike at a job where maybe part of the senior dev's job is to mentor you, that's generally considered a responsibility. The open source person has no such responsibility. So showering them with extra nice things and being helpful and trying to be kind and make it clear that you value their time, those are always, I think, get a much better return on that open source investment instead of just, hey, make me better dev now, please.
Yeah, totally.
How do you now do that and help make other people better in your position? And are you still looking and actively seeking out ways for you to become better?
A lot of what I do at Laravel is what I would say just sort of like curation and feedback and brainstorming with people on how products should work. So hopefully they find that useful, you know, as they work with me at Laravel. For me, I think, I consider myself to have a few friends that I still consider quite a bit smarter than me, right? So like, it could be like Adam, creator of Tailwind, a better programmer than me, you know what I mean? So if I have like a question as far as how something should work, or is this kind of on the right track, he's probably going to be one of the first people I go to, because I just think he's a level up from where I am. And there are other people in the Laravel world like that, actually, that are probably like better at Laravel than I am at this point, that I will go to. I unfortunately don't have like, you know, I work from home, and sometimes I so wish just like I miss working in an office full of just like hardcore, awesome people. And I think that's one of the bummers about working from home, even though I love it, is just missing that kind of, like you're around a whiteboard and you're just riffing on a problem and everyone's pumped up, and it's just an awesome feeling, you know, to be in that situation. So I do miss that, and I don't have that at the moment. So it's mainly just seeking out those friends that I feel like are a little bit better than me, and, you know, riffing on stuff together that way.
Do you ever do like Laravel offsites or anything? I'm just throwing it out there. It'd be fun.
Yeah.
So
we actually did our first, our first Laravel offsite right after the Dallas conference that y'all were at.
Nice.
We were at a hotel and we had like a meeting room, and we just went through some of the stuff we were working on as a company. But I think it would be fun next year to actually like hack on stuff together, because we really didn't do that. We just sort of like recapped, you know, what we were working on, and everyone shared a little bit about their piece of what they were doing. But I think it would be cool to like all actually have our laptops out. Let's like build a feature, you know, that I think that's actually just so much fun as a team.
Yeah, my favorite memory from the first startup that I joined was we did an offsite. We needed to rewrite practically everything as a last-ditch effort to find product market fit. We did complete the rewrite. We did not find the product market fit. Shortly after this, we decided it was no longer good to be a company, but that's beside the point. The week that we spent together working, you know, morning till night was some of my favorite memories from that company. So would recommend, and something that I think is not super easy to replicate remotely.
Yeah.
I don't think but you speaking can of, recommend. Oh. I don't think you can kind of recreate that remotely. I'm at least in Agreed. Pretty heavy doubt on that. And I have the exact same story, which is the times I probably grew the most in my career were the times in which I had these. They're definitely arduous. They weren't easy. Long programming sessions with coworkers where we get together to try to crank out a feature that feels very difficult to get to. And there's something about that kind of like last mile run that is so beneficial, I think, to my overall life. What is it, TJ? TJ's laughing
well,
at me.
Well, for a second, my video disappeared, and then I came back, and they said, welcome back. You're doing great.
Thank you.
Point is awesome. You should not have interrupted it for me.
Sorry.
It feels like almost like lifting to failure. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, kind of similar.
Yeah. Well, we should change gears a little bit and talk about the big, big, big news. And I'm sure you could probably guess the biggest news in the PHP world ever, which is Laravel raising VC money. You didn't see that one coming, did you? You're still obviously reviewing all these PRs. You're still deep in kind of this, the world of Laravel. Is there a time in which you kind of step back now that you're running a bigger and bigger show? Because I assume that the difficulty of your job just 10x'd since you've added twice as much people. Are you going to still be able to be in that role, or is it time for you to slowly kind of, you know, gently drive that Lambo down the highway into the sunset and let other people take control?
I honestly feel that role will be sort of like pried out of my cold, dead fingers, basically. We would like to sort of groom people at the company, and we're working on this, to have similar tastes in the open source stuff that I would have. Not so that they can necessarily do it all the time, but that if we're in a pinch, or if I'm gone, or literally just, you know, on a trip with my family, I can sort of like log off for a week like a normal person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We would like to get to that point. That's not to say that I wouldn't ever do it. I think on a regular basis, I still plan to keep maintaining the framework, keep curating the PRs pretty much for the foreseeable future. But that is a point we'd like to get to, you know. And as far as like, you know, as Laravel has grown, at the start of this year, we were like 10 people, and now we're pushing 40. Thankfully, I feel like we've made really awesome hires to where my life actually doesn't feel a lot harder, because we just have awesome people helping, you know, spread that work out and like do the lifting, that it actually has been great and a lot of fun, which is awesome. Cause I was a little bit scared that it would actually become just like really, really complicated and really annoying. But working with good people is actually really fun and awesome. So it's been good.
Do you think that part of the reason why you're unable or that you really want to be a part of every single PR and all that, do you have a bit of a, like a trust factor that's in this, that it's really
totally
hard to let go? Why is that?
Yes. I think it's just like, it's just a little bit of just straight up OCD, right? That like, I need to know that everything in Laravel is like, okay. And the idea of like code getting merged into the framework that I haven't laid eyes on or I haven't seen, and just like, it would bother deep in the back of my mind. I would feel like there's some gnarly, nasty code in Laravel somewhere and I don't know about it. And that makes me really uncomfortable to know that that's there. You know what I mean? I need to know that like the underside of the lawnmower is clean at this point. And I think it's just like, I don't think it's like totally rational. I don't think it 100% makes sense in terms of like time allocation, but it's just something I need to know, because like, I also have this very, I think at this point, probably irrational idea that if everything hit the fan and I needed to build a new business to make money, I need to use Laravel and I need it to be good. You know, so like I need to keep maintaining it so that if I ever have to write a new startup, that I can use Laravel and I can trust that it's actually good all the way through.
First, I got to say, Prime, you asked that like we were just starting a therapy session in front of a few thousand people. Just the way you asked him about trust issues was cracking me up.
Dude, it's true. I mean, because I can feel...
What else could it be?
Yeah, you know? I know.
What else could it be?
How else would you ask a trust issues question without it coming across like therapy, okay?
I just liked your framing of it. I thought it was great. I one thing that I find is interesting is you talk quite a bit about the way that you've managed Laravel on more of a business side, and some of the direction side is so much more low touch probably than most people would guess, especially when you balance that against the self-quoted OCD, you know, obsession about all of every single open source PR. I'm sort of wondering how you visualize those. Is it, do you just trust the people that they're working on good stuff? Maybe talk about some of those practices. And I'm also quite interested, have any of those changed since moving from 10 to 35 or 40 people at Laravel?
Yeah, it is kind of funny. Like, I don't necessarily comb through the commercial code as deeply as I do the open source code, even though I am aware of like all the features that are getting merged and what's being shipped out.
Is it React?
But some.
Was it React?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's the problem is I can't even understand it, so I can't refute. But like something about the open source code being public and being like, okay, this like is public code that sort of like has my name associated with it, brings like a certain level of just like desire to curate it a little bit more strongly down to each individual line. I don't know. That's just like how it works in my brain. It is true that like I ran Laravel commercially very low touch, like notoriously so, to where like we didn't even have a call for like years at a time. You know what I mean? It was just all on Slack or Telegram or whatever. And I think it is a big piece of it that I hired people I trusted, and we had a big advantage hiring, right? Because we hire a lot out of open source on the engineering side of open source contributors, and we've seen their work and we've seen what they're capable of compared to just like any other random company that might not have that luxury. So I generally just trusted that they were doing good work and knew what they were doing. And I also just like, I'm always just sort of, it's hard to say this without sounding creepy, I'm always like watching, you know, like I'm always watching over everything that happens, even if we're not having calls about it or we're not talking about it. And if the ship starts to turn a direction that I don't like I'll just, you know, that's when I'll sort of step in. But I don't just sort of like micromanage when things are going well, you know.
So
yeah, that's sorry, Prime. You know, you go. It's you're so smart and good. I'm sure what you're going to say next is going to be profound.
Well, mine was a little bit of a micro topic change, slightly. But if you have something that you feel very deeply
about. No, hit me with the micro topic change.
So, kind of with, you know, this is actually along the lines of trust and all this. With the growth from 10 to approximately 35 employees, that's, you obviously tripled and a half the amount of total employees. And I've been through some changes that were very, very difficult. With this kind of fast ramp up and all that, how has that kind of altered how you approach a lot of your management style or really being able to interact with a lot of the employees?
Yeah, we definitely have more meetings. Like I am on calls most days of the week at this point, whether it be like, you know, we're building Laravel Cloud. We have a weekly cloud team meeting where we go over everything that's come up the previous week, all of that. Same way with like some of our existing products. We have, you know, like customer support meetings. There actually are more calls, and it does feel a little bit more higher touch in that sense. At the same time, I think my overall philosophy of trying to hire really, really capable people and just letting them do what they're best at is unchanged still. And I think part of that is because we're still actually doing a lot of our hiring out of our network, you know what I mean, of people that we know, just because we've hired like a net, you know, net new 25 people. It's not a ton of new people at the end of the day. Most of those are people that we knew or had a really good feeling about. And I think that's helped a ton. But that's just how I like to work, you know, is hiring people that are just really awesome at what they do and just letting them excel at that, whether that be design, you know, like we hired David, who you guys have worked with some, I think.
Yep, David's great.
David knows a lot more about design than I do. So I'd never try to like get in his way or like tell him like, hey, I think this button should look like this. Like I never, ever, ever do that. I just take the design that he gives. Usually I say, great, looks awesome, and we just roll with it. You know what I mean? Because I just trust that like he knows design better than I do, and that's just how I prefer to work. I think that's probably how other people prefer to be interacted with. Mm-hmm. So that's just how I do things.
I will say that whenever I try and do anything not exactly what David does for Terminal Shop, Adam, as in adam.dev, not Adam Wathen, has like a mini breakdown and I have to redo everything. This happened for the basketball game. I'm building it my own way, just trying something out, etc. I come in the next day, Adam says, hey, you can look in, I think he literally put it in overlay slash Adam, or he just made his own route, completely destroyed everything I did, skipped it all, and made his own. So Adam is on your team following exactly what David does, and it's working out apparently well for us. And but that's why he's the intern, you know, so it's fine.
TJ's learning. TJ's learning to respect people that are better than him. He just doesn't quite get it yet. That's why he's always making these jokes.
Well, to be fair, I didn't know you could copy paste CSS out of Figma. And I found that out after spending 8 hours trying to understand CSS and Tailwind. And so I could have probably re-implemented exactly the way the design was in, a tenth of the time. But instead, Chat got to laugh at me as I completely failed doing that all day.
Nice. All right. Yeah. So you kind of present this really interesting worldview. It's actually the reason why in 2013, with a wife that was 36 weeks pregnant, we decided to go to California, to a state I've never been to join a company, because their major motto was effectively along the exact same lines, which is try to hire the best people you can and then remove as much process. How do you continue to remove all the process and like not fall into like the corporate agile trap of stand-ups, retros, planning poker, all this kind of stuff? Like, how do you keep everyone still going on the same way, especially now that you have a very ambitious project? Everyone has to march a direction, but you want everyone to be as independent as possible. I also did not mention Netflix, by the way. I just want you to know, everyone's making fun of me. I did not mention Netflix.
I think actually no one at the company that we've hired just like loves bureaucracy, you know, like at the management level. I think all of us want to get stuff done. We want to ship stuff. So I think at a high level, we're just all very aligned on that mentality. And you know, like that makes things easy, because you're not dealing with a lot of red tape at every level and fighting amongst yourselves about a bunch of bureaucracy and getting crap done. And I think we know that Laravel's history has been sort of defined by being a framework that just ships stuff. And when we raised money, I think Excel, who we worked with, was actually, that was one of the main things they loved, was that we are a very lean team that seems to get a lot done. And we would love to invest in you, but we don't want to change that about the company. We want you to stay a lean, mean machine that is just shipping high quality software. So we don't really want to change who you are at that fundamental level, because that's actually one of the things that most draws us to you, like, you know, as a company and as a team. That's something I've kept in mind, you know, as we've grown. Because it does sometimes, you know, like as you hire that many people, things feel slower for a little while, you know, but let's get back to just shipping as fast as possible, as quickly as possible. Because that's really who we are and like the company I want to work at, you know what I mean?
Do you think that this mentality can kind of be brought to many more companies, or do you think you've just simply created something unique at Laravel?
I mean, I don't think it's totally unique, you know, and we're still a small company, right? So I don't know, like, I don't know the dynamics of when things are, when you have hundreds and hundreds of people, developers or whatever. I don't know anything about managing at that scale, right? So I think right now, the size we are now, things are still pretty easy to keep lean and keep it simple, and we'll see how it goes as we grow. But, you know, for now, it seems to be working, keeping it simple. But I don't think it's unique to Laravel. You know, I think when I was at Rails World, you know, Toby from Shopify was there, and he was like, I was just standing around listening him talk to other people because I was too scared to talk, because he's just like too smart, you know, to interact with. When you hear him talk, you'll get it, you know. But he was saying very similar things. Like he says, like competence can be rare, actually, you know, like so you try to hire really competent people and just let them do their job. And that's the only way he knows how to build a business. You know, they're like 10,000 employees at this point. So I think hopefully it works at scale too.
Yeah. Speaking of sort of scaling things up in Laravel and as the team's been growing, I think one thing, you know, a lot of people are wondering is why raise at all? What does that enable you guys to do? What does that unlock that maybe wasn't there before?
Yeah. It's a good question. So I had, there's a couple things. Like, I had come to a fork in the road personally where most of the ideas I had ever had for Laravel, I had built at that point. Every package idea I've had, every business idea I've had was basically built and launched by then. Except for some really ambitious ideas. So one of the first commercial product I built for Laravel was Laravel Forge, FRGE.laravel.com. And it's basically like a VPS management dashboard for PHP server. So like it creates the server on your AWS account or your DigitalOcean account and installs PHP, MySQL, whatever. I really wanted to build, I mean, even back then in 2014, I would have rather have built something like a Heroku that was like a lot more managed, a lot more just like I drop in my GitHub repo, it deploys out, I can scale it, but I don't really ever have to think about the VPSs at a low level necessarily. That's what I would have built back then, but it was just too risky. Like just me, you know, like one, it was just too big, too ambitious mm-hmm. for one person legitimately to maintain all of that infrastructure. Also a lot of like financial risk building something like that, you know? So when Excel approached me to work together, they asked me, of course, like, what would you build? You know, like if you had more money, the first thing I said was basically Laravel Cloud, which we demoed in Dallas. And there was kind of a second thing I said, which we haven't unveiled yet, which is coming out in Australia here in a few weeks. So those are the projects we decided to tackle. And I mean, the reason why I did it ultimately came down to the fact that, and I came very close to not doing it, to be honest, was I almost felt like people have been riding with Laravel for a long time, over 10 years by now. And I felt like I would be... it would be sort of lame if I just decided to just like kind of check out and I'm just going to go sit in the pool for 6 hours a day and, you know, I'll be good. You guys, good luck with your Laravel apps. I wish you well, but I'm done, you know? And I felt like I really wanted to just like a new challenge and to really swing for the fences for something with Laravel. And if we hit it out of the park, awesome. If we don't, like at least we freaking, you know, tried for all these people that have been like ride or die for like 12 or 13 years that we really went all out and tried to build something amazing. I felt like that was, I mean, like I almost like teared up thinking about it. You know what I mean? Like all these people, like they've come to Laracon, they've built their businesses on Laravel. Like I'm not going to go just like chill right now, you know, maybe later. I'll do that down the road. But right now I think there's like unfinished business and we need to at least try to make it happen.
You said that you didn't, you almost didn't take it. Why? Mm-hmm. Like what would be the motivation for not doing this?
Because I was already successful, basically. I had already been successful with Laravel as a commercial entity. I had already made the amount of money I would want to make from Laravel. So the money really was not going to be life-changing, any sort of payout I would receive from this. It was, and that was why, one of the main reasons I didn't want to do it, right? Just like another complication in my life that like I wasn't required for me to take. And I was upfront about this, right? Like, look, you've been to my house, you've seen my life. My life is fine. Like I don't need anything from you guys. But so that was the main reason I almost didn't do it. But again, like I just felt like, again, there was unfinished business that I would love to try to build these amazing things for the Laravel community. And I would feel bad if we didn't take that shot. But it was projects that I couldn't do out of my own pocket. You know, it was too risky. It was too, too big to really self-fund it.
Where do you think bringing Laravel Cloud in, right, where does that place Laravel? What does it open up for the community that maybe it didn't have before?
Yeah. So when I first started doing PHP back in 2010, a lot of people wrote PHP because it was easy to host compared to like other languages, whether that was .NET or even like JavaScript back then. You just FTP'd some files up to dreamhost.com or GoDaddy or whatever, and everything just worked. And over the years, that was true for a little while, but I think it's no longer true actually in this kind of weird way. Like now throwing something up on Vercel is actually much easier than hosting a PHP app, you know, for better or worse. Mm-hmm. And I would like to get to the point where PHP and Laravel is just a no-brainer, full stack solution for building your next big idea, or all the way down from like a one person thing, kind of like DHH is really passionate about, all the way up to like, you know, companies or startups that are just getting off the ground. And part of that story goes all the way back to like local development with, you know, the VS Code extension we're writing, or like the LSP stuff we would like to do to bring that to other ecosystems, or even down to the way you install PHP, which is, you know, something we launched yesterday, all the way up to production. And cloud is sort of that production thing where like, I just want to be able to link my GitHub repo, throw it out there. It scales, it's secure, it works. And if I want to do like VPSs and self-manage that, interestingly enough, like we're going to have a solution for that too, because we already wrote Forge 10 years ago. So, you know, if I want to go like full Peter Level style and just run everything on a VPS, we're going to have that too, but we'll also have a fully managed cloud platform. And I think it just repositions PHP and Laravel as being just as easy to host as any other thing, you know, Vercel or Heroku or whatever. I would like to get to that point.
Yeah, I think that that totally makes sense in terms of what it enables for Laravel. I think it's interesting just in today's world of having VC funding and open source. How do you feel Laravel will balance that going forward? What do you think? Are there change priorities? You know, I'm just interested to hear sort of your thoughts on that. I worked at a VC-backed open source company before this, so I'm interested to hear some of your thoughts on that.
So I wouldn't say the overall priorities have actually changed that much for us internally. We've actually hired full-time employees that only work on open source since we raised money. Mm-hmm. We've hired one that's already on board, and we just got an offer accepted on another one. So we actually are hiring like full-time employees. They work basically directly with me on open source initiatives. And that's going to be like starter kits, you know, documentation, the website, the framework itself, all of that stuff. And then we hire on cloud too, of course. But no, the overall priorities are not different. And kind of like the North Star that I'm always like aiming towards is, you know, I picture someone buying a laptop. They have a brand new laptop. How do they get a Laravel app up and running as easily as possible? That's something we've really been focusing on with this like php.new stuff with Herd or whatever. And then how do they get it to production? Because I want people to be able to, I mean, this sounds, I don't know, hopefully people don't laugh at this, but I would like to reposition PHP and Laravel as being top of funnel, net new web development. You know, like that is my goal. It's an ambitious goal. I think that's where PHP used to be. You know, like a lot of people when I first started writing Laravel, very common for them to start web development on PHP. I think that's not any longer the case. Typically, they're coming in on React or Next.js or some sort of flavor of JavaScript into web development. I think they are limited in a sense by the lack of cohesion in those ecosystems. And it's really important for me to try to, the best we can, we'll see if we succeed or not, reposition PHP as a very viable candidate for getting started in web development. And I think that all boils down to how accessible we can make it in terms of local development. I think things like Livewire go a long way because we can kind of keep you in one stack, but still let you write a modern feeling front end. And Laravel Cloud is another big piece of that in terms of letting you ship it out to production in a way that is super fast and super easy. Because I think, you know, that's what I'm shooting for. That is sort of the ambitious goal that we have. And it's really like this almost holy crusade I have at this point to like make web development as enjoyable and as easy as possible.
Is part of the problem, you know, because I actually was a part of the early days of PHP, and so I've seen a lot of it, and I learned from the web development via PHP. And a big part of that was that when I was writing a front end, the front end was largely HTML, CSS, a little bit of JavaScript, you know, just a touch. You had the your script tag up at the top to include jQuery, plus, you know, however many scripts you need for each page, and bada bing, bada boom, you're off and you're running, and you kind of have a script for every page, and you're navigating to each, you know, section, for those that don't know what the web was like at one point. But PHP was actually one of the largest parts of the app, just because it wasn't like the interactivity level was so much smaller. And so as part of the reason why PHP is no longer, or at least is going to be very difficult to become the first language people learn, is that the amount of JavaScript needed these days has grown disproportional to the amount of PHP. Because everything's easier in PHP, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think like user expectations have changed in terms of how sophisticated front ends need to be to feel modern and relevant these days. You know, the front end is usually pretty advanced. There's a lot of like smooth interactions. It feels very like native almost. And I think we're working towards that. You know, in the Laravel ecosystem, one, you don't even have to use PHP on the front end. Of course, like we said, you could use Inertia and fully embrace React and Vue. And I think that's a really important aspect of why we do that, is because the expectations on the front end are different now than they were in 2011. They just are. And a lot of times it's you reject JavaScript on the front end, like to your detriment a lot of times. But at the same time, for getting started, I think it still is genuinely useful to be able to use something like Livewire. So on that side of the coin, like at Laracon Dallas, Caleb showed Flux UI, which is like a UI toolkit, component kit, kind of like ShadCN almost, but for Livewire powered apps. So you have like modals, dropdowns, flyovers, and all of this works with Livewire and Laravel really cleanly. And I think that's a big piece of the puzzle that was missing, actually, was that sort of UI toolkit for the Livewire flavor of Laravel apps. Because I think that's a really easy way to get started with Laravel if you're just totally brand new to web development, is to use something like that.
Yeah, I love it. I love the ambitious goal. Let's make PHP the gateway to the web again, right? That everybody goes through. I think that that's really cool and a very big goal. So I'm excited to see what happens.
In the same way, it's like, what other goal could we have? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The alternative is like rolling over and just like being like, okay, we lost. PHP lost, and we're going to just like hope that we can stay relevant for a little while. But that feels like really lame to me, rather than just like, okay, like we're going to like actually fight. You know what I mean? We're actually going to put the gloves on and get in the ring and like fight for this.
How do you prevent some of, because one of the big problems about JavaScript, or some would say one of the big benefits, is that a lot of modern things, including servers, you know, server components and all this, is really trying to almost, how would you say, other than hide what the web actually is, the request response model, the ability to have server state versus client state, is really hiding or abstracting away almost everything to do with web development and treating it as kind of one contiguous machine. Is that type of ease good? And is that what PHP is missing? Or do you believe it can be solved differently?
I think, I don't think it's necessarily bad. And I think Livewire kind of feels this way to some extent, to where you define methods in like a PHP class and the line between the front end and the back end gets a little bit more blurred than would typically be the case in PHP apps. I think it can be like kind of a productive way to work and build things for the web. I just think that overall the JavaScript ecosystem has suffered from sort of a cohesive vision for full stack apps. And I think it's led to a generation of developers. This is just like my observation, is that a lot of the things people are building with these tools are just not as ambitious as the kinds of things people were building in the heyday of like the Rails startup era. You know what I mean? Or like where one person could sit down and like literally Toby sits down and he does Rails new Shopify. You know what I mean? Like that's insanity to think about, but I don't know. It just seems a little bit different now. And I think that's why I'm so passionate about getting Laravel back kind of at the top of funnel for web dev. And I think it unlocks a lot of really ambitious things that you could build because you have so many things at your fingertips, that I find that really exciting.
Yeah, we can definitely relate. We are trying to create the Shopify experience in the terminal, of course. So many people are aware of our large ambitions there. Next year, it's not just going to be coffee. It's going to be everything. No, that's not. We like selling coffee. So anyways, on that note, we're going to transition into the Q&A section. So chat, if you are in the Top Shelf, Tier 2 and Tier 3 subscribers to this channel, you could also subscribe to mine, but it won't help you get in the Top Shelf.
He streams, by the way.
Nice dream, by the way. You should go in there now and start submitting questions. Do not send random messages in there. They'll get deleted. Okay. We're just asking questions and then thumb up and thumb down so we can send Taylor the best questions there.
Yep.
And we'll get started.
And here's a word from our sponsors.
Ah, TJ, my favorite front-end web developer.
That's me, well known for knowing things about browsers.
Hey, TJ, I'm the CEO of the startup, and we need a product, but not just for the web, but for mobile.
Wow, are things going so well that we now can't get by just with our React SPA?
Yes, we need more profits.
Amazing. Well, my suggestion, since I only know about websites, is we should consider consulting with Infinite Red.
Infinite Red? I've never heard of them. Have they been around since 2015, specifically?
In fact, they have. Not only that, all of their developers are senior level plus, many with over 10 years of professional development.
Wow, that's amazing. It kind of sounds like they only do React Native and have completed 75 applications for the smallest startups all the way up to the world's biggest companies.
That's true. I am not surprised you knew that because you're very smart, Mr. CEO.
Bruh.
You're absolutely correct, TJ. And that's why we're going to choose Infinite Red for our next React Native application.
We'll give you a softball one to start with from the chat. No, not what's your social security number, although great question after he says he will answer anything. Smart. But delete that message, mods.
Don't worry. First it's been leaked. Question. All social security numbers have been leaked, so you don't have to worry about it.
They're useless. I think, why was Laravel created?
It was created because I had business ideas that I wanted to build. I wanted to build them quickly. I had a cheap Windows laptop that I could not figure out how to install Rails and Ruby on. And a lot of it comes down to that simple fact, actually, of not being able to get Ruby running on that laptop. So that I was like, well, I guess I'll do PHP because I've used that in college a little bit, which kind of led to me like wanting a very productive framework in that language. And it just didn't really exist in the way I wanted it to. And so I really built Laravel just for me, honestly, like in the very DHH style of creating Rails. And I wasn't super concerned if anyone else used it. It was mainly just so that I could build my own ideas more quickly. And once I finished it, which took like 6 months maybe of kind of working on the initial version, which was again like much smaller than the Laravel you see today, of course. I was like, well, this is like decent, you know, like I'll put some docs around it and put it up on GitHub and see how it goes. And
and now we're here. You
know, like, yeah, here we are.
If you were to build a framework not in PHP today, what language / ecosystem would you be drawn to?
I would probably write it in JavaScript, I think. Yeah, I think, you know.
The greatest anime betrayal of all time right now.
Top 10 anime betrayals. You heard it here first on Top Shelf. Oh, goodness. Hold the phone.
It's probably the language I know best after PHP, you know. I don't know.
But
Prime can't even speak. He can't
say. Hold the phones. So you would build an entire...
Did you want me to say like Zig or something?
Elixir. I was hoping you'd just say Elixir to make all the Elixir Andy's so happy.
Yeah.
I would be okay with that, actually. I've never used Elixir, so I wouldn't be super educated on that, but I respect it from afar. It seems like a high IQ, big brain language.
Mm. The Elixir fans in chat will be very happy to hear that's your reasoning for thinking about Elixir is that they're all big brain.
Yeah, it seems that way.
Yeah, I think the question is, do you ever get inspired by other frameworks? For how to implement a feature, how not to, names,
oh yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, in the early days, that's all I did was like, if I was going to write the routing feature of Laravel, it was like Rails routing, Django routing, Sinatra routing, just reading the docs, taking all the, you know, best ideas, coolest ideas I saw, the way they were doing things. And some things I actually did do differently, right? Like when I wrote Laravel, the ORM and Rails active record and validation used to be like sort of like coupled together, right? You defined like your validation rules for your models right in the Eloquent model. And I really did not like that actually from the very beginning. So in Laravel, that was never the case. So that's sort of an example of like, you know, deviating from some of the docs, but a lot of stuff was super inspired by what existed at the time.
So Laravel is a feature-rich framework, but for smaller, simpler projects, it can feel a bit heavy. Have you ever considered introducing a more streamlined, light version of Laravel for simple applications, similar to CodeIgniter's minimal footprint?
Yeah, we did that actually. And so here was the problem with that. We put that out there as a framework called Lumen. And it was like a micro Laravel that was a smaller footprint in terms of just like all the way, like the file structure was simpler, the features were more cut back. And inevitably, people dream big for their apps. You know what I mean? Like, this app's really going to need everything. And so they would start on Lumen and always outgrow it or like feel the pain points and want to migrate to Laravel. And so what we tried to do actually with Laravel 11 last year is just really simplify Laravel itself to be as minimal as possible and let you opt into as much as you want to try to like find a middle ground between those two things, which I think I feel a lot better about.
Sort of along those lines, this question comes in from longtime listener, multiple time caller, Lex Friedman. Thanks, Lex. Good to get your question in. How to know when to use Laravel or vanilla PHP? Vanilla, sorry. I don't know why I said vanilla.
Laravel. Yeah, you know,
just... I'm my tongue vanilla. Is twisted. It's because I'm reading Lex's message. I'm sorry, okay? My palms are sweaty, knees weak. So when to know to use Laravel or vanilla PHP as a solo developer for a small or medium sized project? And do you see any, you know, advantages for each?
I really think you should just always use a framework like Laravel, especially in PHP. There's just a lot of kind of gotchas and ways you can shoot yourself in the foot using PHP, where a framework really takes care of that stuff for you. Could be like on security stuff, right? Or on, you know, database, you know, SQL injection vulnerabilities and stuff like that, where a framework's really going to help you out. I think we've tried to simplify Laravel, like I said, to an extent to where it feels not super heavy, hopefully, to the point where I would just always use that over vanilla PHP. Your life is just going to be much easier and much better. You're going to be much more productive, I think.
Are you saying that using vanilla PHP actually requires a significantly larger skill gap than it would if you were using Laravel? Like, it's actually harder to do that in all cases? Yeah, totally. Is there any case where it's actually just easier?
Well, if you were going to write like a simple, like a script that you invoke on the command line to like read some data out of a spreadsheet, parse it, dump it back out into a file, you know, something like that. Maybe you just write like a vanilla PHP script, right? And just like invoke it in the terminal. But if you're going to try to write like a full-fledged web application, yes, it's going to be significantly harder to do it in vanilla PHP.
Okay. That makes sense. You're supposed to say for the command line go, but that's okay. Did you plan from the beginning to monetize Laravel? And if not, how did you accidentally start creating this business?
I didn't plan from the beginning to monetize Laravel. I mean, mainly because I didn't care if anyone used Laravel at the very beginning. I never thought further ahead than that. For the first 2 to 3 years that I worked on Laravel, I'd made $0 working on it. You know, there was no commercial aspect to it at all. The first way I made money off Laravel was I wrote an ebook that I published about how I use Laravel or how I think about using Laravel. I still get like $20 a month off that ebook. So thank you to everyone out there still buying that. But I think I didn't make enough money off that ebook to like quit my job or anything, but I made a decent amount of money to like whet my appetite to maybe do more commercial stuff around Laravel, because it seemed achievable at that point. I maybe could go full time on it. Then I built in my free time at night, again, a lot of late nights in late 2013, early 2014, I built Laravel Forge. This was another tool where I was mainly building it for myself to provision servers to run Laravel apps on really quickly. So I had a bunch of bash scripts that I was using to build these servers, I thought, hey, I'll put a UI in front of all these bash scripts and we'll call it Laravel Forge. And if no one else likes it, great, but I'm going to use it every day to build these servers. And I think within like a month of putting it out there, I was making more on that than I was making at my regular job. And so I was only at that job probably 5 or 6 more months before I went full time on Laravel. And then, you know, again, here we are. I went on to launch like 4 other commercial products around it, but there was never the goal from the beginning to make money on it, which I think you shouldn't have that goal in open source, actually. I think if you want to make money from something you're doing, just charge for it on day one. Don't like put it out there in open source and then like be bitter about it 2 years later. Like, I haven't made any money on this. You're like, you shouldn't have made it open source. You know what I mean? Like, you should have just charged for it from the beginning.
I like that.
Sorry.
Pretty similar.
I'm jumping in. This one's actually a pretty close to home one, which is that you're now making more money than you were at your day job, but you still took 6 months to quit. Why?
I was making more money, but I wasn't making 10x. I was making, let's say, 1.5 or 2x. And the business was still very new. So like I had a family. I had 2 kids at this point. I had a family. If I quit, I'm going to have to go buy health insurance. I'm going to be sort of like the sole responsible party on the hook for like providing for this family. Right. And it just felt still very risky at that time, a couple months in. But you know, once you get a little bit further down the road and it feels like a little bit safer, you can do it. I mainly left, honestly, because my boss at the time, Ian, was like, in a fairly nice way, was like, you have to leave this company. You know what I mean? Like, you are running a totally separate company that is requires, you know, it's going to require significant time investment. It's just not compatible for you to have like 2 full-time jobs. So I kind of got nudged out the door, you might say. But my hesitance was mainly around, you know, just like, I'm making more money, but I'm not making millions and millions and millions of dollars. So
I already see the headlines, Laravel creator fired from PHP job.
Yeah. For using Laravel. Fired for using Laravel.
Why I got fired for using my own framework. That's a good one. Pretty good question here, I think. Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
I've never even tried that.
No, it doesn't look... way.
Okay. Next time we're in person together.
I've never had a bite of pizza in my mouth that also had pineapple on it. So far.
How have you not accidentally
I've seen it done. I've seen many people do it. But I've never actually taken a piece and just put it in my mouth. You know what I mean? I don't know. It just doesn't look that appetizing to me. But I like pineapple and I like pizza. I'm willing to give that a shot, you know.
Okay, when we're in person together next.
Yeah,
I'll do that.
We'll take a video.
Ever, yeah, if we're ever in person, I'll do that.
We'll get your live reaction.
First time having... Dude, I hope you just love it and you just crush every Italian's dream just all at the exact same time. Mamma mia! They're all just screaming at once as you're just loving pineapple on pizza. All right, so... A lot of people are asking this, and Flip, by the way, you can take this part out. Do you want to give any thoughts or opinions on the WP drama, or do you just want to stay out of that?
You know, like, I can give my thoughts and opinions. I've never done a lot of WordPress. I've never been in that community. I don't really know the vibes over there, but I mean, it seems kind of nasty. I think the Matt guy from WordPress, and hopefully he doesn't like sue me or something. I think he seems to kind of just be going a little bit, I don't know. He seems to have kind of jumped the shark a little bit here. I think it seems a little crazy. I think a pretty unnecessary. Like, I don't really understand it or get it. I think the ask for like, what was it, like 8% of revenue from WP Engine after all of these years seems like way out of nowhere and kind of just crazy of an ask, but. You know, I don't know. I don't understand his perspective, honestly. I actually disagree that, like, I think WP Engine does benefit WordPress just by existing. And, like, in the same way that Laracast.com is not associated with Laravel in any way, in the sense that we don't get any rev share. There's no backroom deals between me and Jeffrey Way at Laracast where I get stuff. But it would be silly to say that Laracast has not benefited Laravel in a significant way just by existing, by promoting Laravel, by spreading Laravel. So I don't know why he doesn't feel that same way about WP Engine. He seems like he's already a really successful guy, so I'm not really sure what he's going after there.
How do you manage that? How do you know when enough is enough? Is there anything in your life that you own that you've even embroidered with? This is all just kind of an illusion, if you will.
Yeah. When enough is enough, like business-wise or success-wise?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, like I actually agree with DHH a lot on this point too, where he had a blog post where he was like, the ability to just like go out to eat or buy an outfit, and not like an outfit at like some designer store, right? Just yeah. You buy clothes at like the mall or something. The ability to do that without really it bothering you or without you having to think about it that much, it doesn't get much better than that. Beyond, like, you can go further than that, but getting to that point is actually like the biggest leap that you can make in terms of just like money and success and stuff like that. And everything else past that is like very minor in comparison, I would say. So, you know, I don't know. That would be my take on it.
That's a great
take. That's been my experience as well. And also the fact that you don't get any like happier beyond that. You know, that's all like inside yourself, more or less. That's been my experience, at least.
That's an absolutely awesome take. When I was young, one of the things we couldn't do is that my mom would only be able to buy us one pair of shoes for each one of our kind of growth phase. And so my basketball shoes were my outdoor shoes, were my, you know, everyday shoes and all that kind of stuff. And so one of the big motivating factors in my life has always been I can buy my kids like sports shoes. Like if they're in soccer, they're actually going to get cleats. Like I never got cleats in soccer because we couldn't afford cleats in soccer. And so it's just like such a different, you know, world to live in where I think you're spot on. And by the way, the question was kind of like also kind of directed towards you to talk about your Lambo. I think it has a license plate on it that helps remind you of various things.
Yeah, the license plate is Facade, which is a feature in Laravel Facades, that everyone freaking hated when I first came out of it. And so the license plate is 50% a dunk on all of that, one. And the other half is this very, like, hopefully noble goal of reminding me that the car is metal and bolts and screws, and it's going to totally degrade and be in a junkyard at some point. You know, the attractive car is a facade for just metal and machinery that is ultimately going to be meaningless. And I know it sounds like kind of easy to say for, oh, you're the guy with the Lambo, so of course you can say that. Like, you know what I mean? But it genuinely is like just a reminder of like, okay, this car is like super pointless at the end of the day. And will never make you happy in a real deep sense. And it will be in a junkyard at some point. So just remember that, you know, like every time you drive it or every time you think about it, that is not the most important thing or even meaningful in any way, to be honest.
Yeah, I love that. I think this question maybe plays along some of those lines. I think, if you could go back in time and teach your younger self one lesson you learned in your career, what would it be?
I think that a lot of the best times in open source are just the human connections that you make, and being able to work with people around the world and build something that affects the daily lives of any number of people, right? If you're doing open source and you build, I don't know, if you build something for NeoVim, right? And people are using this in their daily life, it's making their job a little bit better. It's making their day a little bit better. That is an enormous privilege, I think, that we share as developers. And it's sort of like once in a lifetime, right? And very few people have this opportunity to affect people around the world. And open source developers get to do that. And the friendships you make and the people you affect are the most important part of all of that. I've had people, you know, come up to me at Laracon And they're literally like crying, you know, pretty much because like I started a company on Laravel. I have this sick family member. I'm able to provide for them in a way that I wouldn't have been able to if I hadn't have started this company, and this framework allowed me to do that. Those kinds of like stories are like way more important than all of the business stuff or Lambos or any of that. You know what I mean? That's the most valuable part.
Yeah, I super resonate with what you're saying. I've talked with my wife a ton about, especially as Telescope was first getting popular in NeoVim, and someone would come into stream or something and say, oh, I'm in Japan and I use Telescope, right? Or some guy writes an article, I remember, in Japanese comparing all the different fuzzy finders. I have to use Google Translate to see what it says. And it says, Telescope's pretty cool. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And I just think about, that experience is brand new. No one else in history has gotten effectively to have this experience, right?
I know. It's crazy too. Sometimes I think about like, it's crazy how many people around the world you can affect that. Like when that developer using Telescope is like 80 years old, right? They're like in a nursing home. Someone next to them is like, hey, remember that Telescope thing for NeoVim? And they're like, yeah, that was sick. That was super cool. It's like the fact that there's like people in other countries that will be true for is just crazy to have this like worldwide impact. And I think it's just so unique and cool and open source.
Yeah, it is just, and it's such a, I don't think anybody has made life-changing money using Telescope. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe someone built a SaaS on top of Telescope that I'm not aware of. But it is very fun, and it's so rewarding and cool to see people saying, oh, it makes me smile that it does it this way, or like, it makes me happy that this happens, or whatever it is. I think those are, that experience is really powerful and exciting. And the flip side of that, I think Prime, you can probably speak to this as well, and I'm sure this happened to you, Taylor, is hearing people that had their passion for software reignited through something that you've done, whether that's making NeoVim plugins and now they're having fun doing stuff that they haven't had since school, or for Prime, it's like, wow, he can't even read and he's successful. Like, I can do this too. It's just really exciting to hear that you're materially changing someone's life in a positive way and they're having great outcomes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is pretty wild. It's pretty wild. And it's interesting to be able to do that from anywhere, right? Like, I'm in Arkansas, the ability to affect someone's life in India or something like that. Matter of fact, this was actually another really good example of this. I was at Laracon India last year and it was absolutely bananas. Like, it was the only time I've ever felt like Justin Bieber or something, where it was like, I've never taken so many selfies. I've never signed so many like autographs.
I tried not to make fun of him for that, DJ. Okay.
All the celebrities.
Michael Jackson, just, you know, you know what I mean.
You didn't get better.
Bro, Taylor is Justin my Bieber. Justin Bieber.
Who do you want me to say? Who's someone people take pictures of or
I don't know, but I don't know. I just love, I love this comparison. I don't know why. Okay. Just
how I had a very serious point that I was trying to make here.
Sorry, where... yeah. You can continue.
Please keep on going.
Clint Eastwood is better. You can be Clint Eastwood.
Exactly. Thank you. So I'm at Laracon India and like these two girls come up to me. Okay. There's two developers at Laracon India. They're like, hey, you know, can we talk to you for a second? And I'm like, sure. So we kind of like step off to the side of this crowd, right? Where there's tons of people. And they're like, we just wanted to thank you because it is very hard for us to build an independent sort of like sustainable life in our country as female developers. And Laravel like unlocked the ability for us to build a life that we wanted.
Dang.
Which to me, for like a one guy sitting in Arkansas, building a framework to like have that kind of like far reaching impact is just like mind blowing. And I never would have expected that when I first started coding on Laravel for myself. But that's just sort of the magic of open source, you know, and putting stuff out there in the world.
That's a great note. That's a great note right there to end on too.
Do you have anything else you want to ask, Primer, or are we all done?
I think we're all done. I think this is right.
I like that as an ending.
That's good.
I think it's great.
It's a great ending. As always, we always usually give kind of like any sort of last things you want to plug, last things you want to say, anything you would like to kind of express now. Now is your chance.
Yeah. Well, you know, Laravel.com if you want to check out Laravel. If you want to learn about Laravel, Laracast.com. If you want to check out Laravel Cloud, cloud.laravel.com, you can get on the waiting list.
Are you pretty excited about the cloud launch?
I am super excited. I mean, it's what I've always wanted to use. Yeah, I'm definitely nervous. We've never built anything this big, this ambitious. But at the same time, it's like what I've always wanted for myself to be able to deploy Laravel apps. So like, I want to be like user number one, you know, shipping stuff on this thing. So those are always the funnest products to work on, or the products that like you want to use yourself and you're building for yourself to some extent.
I love it. Hey, thanks a bunch, Taylor, for coming on and chatting with us and putting up with our shenanigans here and with putting up with Twitch chat. Can we get one more clap in the chat for Taylor before we're all done?
Thank you, Twitch chat.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you, Twitch chat. And also thank you, Lex, but not the rest of YouTube.
Exclusively Lex. Good point. Thank you.
Was that the real Lex? Were y'all just messing with me? Or?
No, that was the real Lex.
The real Lex Friedman asked. Yeah.
Nice. Cool. Yep. Awesome.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody. That ends our episode with Taylor Otwell on the Top Shelf. This is where I say you should subscribe to the Top Shelf when you're watching this in the future, but actually the past for me.